Hi, I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And I'm June Diane Raphael.
And this is
The Deep Dive.
We're about to do what women have done for centuries. We're crowding around the fire with our generous haunches. We got babies hanging off our tits, and we're going to share with you our fears.
That's right. Our joys.
Our tips on how to stay alive.
Now, Jess, we are heeding a call that no one has made.
Not a soul, but you're invited to listen.
Absolutely, because we make one promise and one promise only. We will not Google a thing.
Because frankly, we're too damn tired.
Please get ready to go on
The Deep Dive.
Jessica.
June.
I am very happy to see you. Now, we started off, we did the interview with our special guest who you're about to hear first, and now we're coming back to check in. So I just want to place us here.
And it was such a good interview.
Oh, I feel energized.
Me too. It's with Cameron Esposito, and we'll talk about her obviously later in all of her credits. And she wrote a book called Save Yourself, and she's just this phenomenal person interested in religion and the spiritual journey. And boy, is she something.
I really love her.
With her.
Yeah, I think so. Honestly, I'm like, ready to walk out of my life.
Like, I imagining myself at dinner with her alone at some place in Topanga Canyon?
I didn't want to say this, but I think she's the reason why I put on makeup today.
I didn't realize I was going to be so charged.
I know.
By how beautiful she's so beautiful.
But,
it was. We might give it all up. I don't know.
And I don't think I'm really thinking about why I got ready this morning. And, I think that I've never gotten dressed up for a man on this podcast. And we've only had a few here and there, but
I've never seen you actually look this good.
I know.
For me, for certain.
Oh, well, that's
come,
not. Yeah.
You don't come with that energy.
But I was we have someone, I got to look alive,
I could go back and put on a different
outfit. I don't want her to see me just stumbled out of bed. She deserves her body of work, her spirit and her energy deserves something to look at on the screen. Well, you know?
If she has to choose, she's probably going to choose you. And I'll have to let that happen. It'll be another casting in which
you've gotten several roles that I've wanted.
I know.
So
it's time for you to shine.
Yeah, it is. It's not.
I let you too. I let you shine on this interview. I really tried to. Well, I'm really trying not to interrupt. And I got to tell you, it's hellacious.
Hellacious. Okay, tell me about that experience. Because now, when people listen, I hope they just listen and enjoy it. But I did. I felt like I was talking too much.
No.
But maybe it's just because I now have an opening. Because you've really piped out.
You do, June.
I know. I did feel like I'm hearing myself quite a bit more than I'm used to.
I'm not happy about
you've, it. You've clamped down.
I'm not happy about it, but
yes,
I am.
You've put this on yourself. You realize that.
No.
Is this an exercise? What's happening?
When it's just the two of us, I don't respect you enough to let you talk.
I wouldn't expect you to.
And I don't let you talk. But I mean, I don't watch myself. But when we're with guests, I am learning, as uncomfortable as it feels, I can't breathe. I want you to know that I am trying to breathe through the urge to talk, because I especially with someone like Cameron, God, I got so much to say and I want to just get in there with her. But boy, have I been missing a lot. I've been when you let someone finish their sentence, it can really surprise you.
Oh my God. Guys, put that on a t-shirt. Please put it on a mug. Let's get that going right now. Let someone finish. Yeah, well, listen, I was talking to one of my girlfriends about this yesterday. I think I as I get older, I'm having a harder time listening.
Oh, are you? Because in my old age, I'm trying to listen for the first time.
Yeah.
So it's different. We're on different journeys.
I know. And so while you're listening, are you going over all the things you want to say?
I'm trying to honestly manage the panic that's bubbling up in me that I'm just keeping silent. And I mean, really, and with Dan, I'm working on it too, because he's like, God damn it, let me get a sentence out. I don't even know I'm doing it. My family doesn't let anybody finish a thought. Never. And wow. I really do want to be a good listener. And I want to hear what the world has to offer me for the first time in my life. But I also hate it. It's like eating vegetables. You know?
It's so I want to learn to like because
broccolini.
I know. And I don't want to change. I don't want you to change a thing about yourself. So it's hard for me, you know? And the last thing I want is for your spirit to be dimmed or you to turn the lights down even a little bit.
I really don't. I know. Don't worry. When it's the two of us, I'm going to still be as rude as fuck. But when we have an extra person who might have something to offer instead of the same old stories we've told each other over and over again, because we are turning into like Grey Gardens. Like we are singing that same song.
Jessica, I've thought about that. And now we're telling the story about how we were telling stories over and over. And you know I thought about that. But I really am quite okay with it because this is the thing about like legends, folklore, past oral tradition, things get told over and over. And is it to each other? Sometimes yes.
Well, I've always said I love your voice and the way you tell a story so much. That's why I'm always like, June, tell the one where. Or, you know, because I have heard these stories and I never get tired of them. And then I can tell yours as my own.
Well, your Today Show story and certain things that have happened to you along the way, sometimes I do wonder if it happened to me because I feel so connected to
present.
And I know you... In one of the last podcasts, we were trying to figure out if that story was even true, if the telling of it over the years, it has taken on new meaning. But by the way, that is also the beauty and the gift of storytelling and oral tradition, that we should expect these stories to change a little bit.
I mean, yes. I mean, I feel...
This isn't a documentary.
This also, though, isn't a Greek myth, you know, that's been passed down that many generations.
I feel it is.
You know, I'll say to Dan, like, and I will say out loud on this podcast, like, that unfurling penis story.
Yeah.
That wasn't him. That was our friend Court. But the two of us had to stop. I go, no, that was you, Dan. He's like, no, that was Court. I wasn't there that season. But that penis did unfurl.
No, and I know the sound of it.
The sound did hit the stage, but it wasn't Dan.
And that was the cue. And that's like, when they say...
It was our friend Court, not Dan.
Okay.
But I didn't care and neither did he. He goes, keep it in. It's a great story. I'm okay with it being me.
And we can't get so mired down in facts and figures because that's, you know,
it's a bummer too.
That's the patriarchy. And like we're taking essences and we're taking meaning and making meaning. But we cannot be imprisoned by the minor details of whose story it is. And
well, also, have you ever had somebody at a cocktail party be like, or like a couple? Where they start telling it and they go, that's not how it happened. And you're like, that's a fucking bummer. You got a good story to tell me? I don't care if it's true. I really don't.
I really could care less. Well, I do have a story to tell
you,
Jessica.
Tell me. I want to be told one.
And today's podcast, this is a pretty witchy podcast today.
Oh, yeah.
This is a pretty, I don't know. It's a witchy time. And I do have to share with you, because I know you'll appreciate it.
Please.
That I have, you know, my mother has shown up as a hummingbird since she passed away. And I've had these like crazy intimate experiences with hummingbirds. But earlier this week, I was sitting outside on our little balcony and a hummingbird flew less than a foot in front of my face. Fluttered there for so long. That I got scared and
that it was going to attack
and
you.
Ran and
you thought it was gonna-
yes, or that I was going to hit it. Okay. And I got scared and I ran inside. That's how long it was out there for. So I then, a couple days later, turn on that Tyler Henry show or Tyler Medium. I've never seen him, never knew anything about it. I turn it on randomly, and he is, when I press play, talking to two women about how a hummingbird is coming through. And I'm like, oh, now this is in the span of 3 days. Now cut to 2 days later. Kulapalisak had given me a like Akshtonic records reading. I don't know what.
Sure.
I'm going to say that I'm just butchered that. But sure, whatever that is, she gave me a reading.
Sure.
For my birthday. And I went and finally got the reading. And
it wasn't from Kulap.
Kulap purchased it for me.
Thank you. I thought Kulap was doing Ashtonic readings, which I
wouldn't be far off. Yeah.
Yeah.
But now there's another thing that's happening, which is that my oldest son, Gus, is having a birthday this weekend. And I have been really struggling with it and struggling with him getting older and feeling like I can't get at time and feeling the grief. I feel a lot of grief around my kids' birthdays. Feel a lot of grief that my parents aren't here to celebrate.
Yes.
And we are having a basketball like tournament for him with like four of his friends. And adults are going to play, the kids are going to play
because
he loves basketball tournaments so much. Okay. So we have a hoop in our driveway. And so know that, put that over there for a second. And I'm, you know, doing brackets for the tournament. Paul's going to be the announcer. I have hired a ref that's coming to referee these one-on-one games. Okay. So know that it's all centered around this tournament and basketball playing. So I go to this reading and lots of stuff is brought up, which I won't even get into. But one of the things she says is, you know, there's these two, as I'm leaving and packing up, she's like, by the way, there's these two twin babies. Like sort of angels. Now, I don't know what that means. It could mean actual babies. It could mean two beginnings, or I don't know what it means. And I'm like, I don't really want any more children. So we'll have this conversation. I come home. Now, Gus doesn't know this, but for his birthday, we're getting a like half court painted.
Oh my God.
Okay. So we have this incredible handyman who, it's just a lovely guy. He's a fan of how this got made. I don't even know how he came into our lives, but he's basically here all the time. Now, he had come over to talk through the court, and because he's going to do it like at nighttime.
Oh, God. He's
going to wake up on his birthday.
This is the best.
Okay. So I come home from this reading, and he's in the driveway with Paul, and Paul goes, you got to come over here. And I said, okay. And I walk over, he goes, look what's up on the net.
No.
And I look up at the net, and a hummingbird has made a nest.
Oh my God.
On like the string of the net. And she's sitting on it.
I can't.
And I said, what? Now, Kyle, the handyman, is here for this. And I'm like trying to explain to him, like, my mom has shown up as a hummingbird. I don't know. I've never seen a nest. I mean, have you ever seen a hummingbird's nest?
I haven't. First of all, I'm crying. I haven't seen a hummingbird in, I don't know, years at this point. So I know I've never seen a nest. I've never had it hover in front of my face. None of this has ever happened to me.
So then we're talking about it and I'm like, oh my fucking God. She wanted to be at the party. And she is making herself immune.
Yeah, because you're the sister who says, I don't need to see the sign. I don't need to see the psychic. I don't need to because they're always with me. And your mother's like, okay, bitch. Like, you didn't listen to my Diet Coke shit. You didn't listen to any of that. Like, so, okay, this is me. And I'm here now because I was about to ask you, like, well, what's going on in your life? Like, she wants you to know, like, yes, with the grief, I get it. I validate it. But like, I'm here.
Jess, and I believe it. It was so now the wildest thing is that I now have to get a new basketball hoop and we're like completely rejiggering the backyard because we cannot move this nest.
No, of course you can't.
Okay.
You have to take a picture for me or a video.
I'm going to send you the pictures. You're going to die.
I can't.
Well, let me. So then.
Yes.
Okay. So then And Paul's like, well, maybe if there's no eggs in it, we can move it. I'm like, nobody's fucking touching this nest. Okay.
Now, no. When I tell you it's okay, so the net, it's like hanging precariously. Okay.
And why in broad daylight.
Broad daylight.
So crazy. So, and I'm looking it up. I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be like 18 days for the eggs to. And also, Gus is out there playing basketball every second. I'm like, when did she make this nest? When did she make it? He's never not out there. So I then see her fly away for a second. And I'm like, oh my God. I go up to the balcony and I look in and there's two eggs.
Oh my God.
And Paul looks it up and he's like, oh, because I told him about the reading and the two babies. And he's like, June, hummingbirds always lay two eggs.
Oh my God.
Hello?
How much more do we have to see or hear? Like,
we don't. Ugh. We don't.
And just this week, just so you know, and I'll tell this. Oh very my God, briefly.
Jess, I'm what? So sorry. So Cody just, I guess Paul Instagrammed it, and I didn't even know he did that.
Oh my God,
this is so that's outrageous. Like a little cup, and she's been this sitting on it.
This is fucking outrageous. This
outrageous.
She couldn't be less so, protected. This is insane. God. This nest looks like it is a work of art. It must have taken. How did she do it so quickly?
And I'm seeing, so right now she's not on it. She just flew away, but I'm staring at it from right here, actually. It has been the most magical experience. The most magical.
And Paul's calling it Larry Bird. That's ridiculous.
And I've had to explain to Gus because he was like, am I not having my basketball party? Like, what's happening? You know, and I'm like, listen, we're getting other hoops. We're figuring it out. I'm borrowing basketball hoops from my friend. And I have a moving truck arriving right now to pick up her basketball hoop and bring it over here.
That's
so, yes, it's caused a little bit of upheaval, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm also like, your grandmother wanted to be at your party.
And you explain that to him, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, good. Okay, because some people think I talk too much about this to Bibi, but like,
no. I was like, you understand that, like, she's here.
I love this story. I don't think I've ever loved a story more in my life. I'm devouring this story.
Isn't it crazy?
It's absolutely crazy.
So I am so happy. I'm so happy, and I feel, I don't know. It's really beautiful.
As her medium too, I mean, mm-hmm. I really do feel like this is very similar to the message she sent about your house, which was really more of your dad's message, but it was to say like, yes, we understand you're sad, but not today. You don't need to have that sadness today. Take anything away from the sheer joy because we are here. We're here.
I wish believe it. Now, I did have this woman that who did the reading pull. I did bring up my parents. Now, I was very somber when I saw her, and like, yeah. She didn't know I work in comedy. I came in with like a very kind of like stoic energy. I barely smiled at her. Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe it's my allergies, but it was so funny. So I said, oh, yeah, and I have lost. And she goes, yes, your parents are here. Basically, like, let's not even, that's, she goes, your mom's always with you. Your parents are here. And she goes, oh, they're laughing so hard at you. And which was like, it was almost hard for her to say because like, she just was like, you don't seem like a funny person.
Yeah. And that's like kind of weird. Like you're just like, yeah.
Because they're laughing at your antics. And I was like, oh my God, that's so right. But she was confused because I wasn't coming across like a laugh a minute.
Stone cold bitch. Like she's like, this bitch doesn't bring antics to anybody.
No. You know, so it was just really,
and they really would,
they'd have a laugh. Oh, they'd have a laugh.
And my surrogate mom came through to her daughter in a butterfly. And she, when I tell you, she's being attacked by swarms. Yes. And her mother told her that's what she was going to come back as. And she, a butterfly came and did the same thing, hovered in front of her face. Again, I've not seen one butterfly in, I don't know, months. Hovered in front. And she said, "Mom, hi, Mom. Do you want to land on me?"
Oh, my God.
And then the butterfly landed on her hand and stayed there for like 15 minutes as she just wept.
Oh, my God.
And she was with her two sons at the construction site. They loved to see. And that's what they used to do with Lolly, is go see the construction sites because they loved the trucks, and just landed on her. And then they were at the park 2 days later. Again, it's like they are like, you didn't think this was real? Another one attacked her and that's landed
on her.
Casey
said, I was texting Casey about this hummingbird, and she's like, I'm so sorry, Jean. Like, hummingbirds don't attack people. They don't come straight at their faces.
They attack other hummingbirds. They can be very aggressive when they used to manage yeah. a whole swarm of them. But then, like, and then the this butterfly wouldn't let her alone at the park. And she was like, okay, Mom, okay, I get it. But then she went to lift the car seat out when they got home, and the butterfly was under the baby's seat. Still alive.
Oh, my word.
That's what I mean.
Oh, my word.
If we can just give in, if we could try less hard. Everything's
gonna I'm be right okay. there, sweetie. I mean, I'm right there. Oh, she's back. She just landed back on there.
What?
Yeah. So sometimes she leaves and then comes back. It's what's so interesting too, is like you never see a hummingbird still. So to watch this hummingbird,
I don't think this has ever been seen in nature.
Yeah, to watch this a hummingbird just fucking sit. I mean, she is on those eggs for 24 hours a day, it looks like. She doesn't move off them. Even when there's like the kids are in the backyard, I'm up there on phone calls, like she is sitting on those eggs. And it was like trying to explain to Gus, he's like, why does she sit on them? I'm like, so the mom, so beautiful. The mom is sitting on them to protect them from predators and other birds. So,
because she'll go nuts on it. If something comes to threaten absolutely. It, they will go crazy. They're very aggressive.
And a part of me, like my friend Michaela was like, oh yeah, she just fluttered for a second and went back. My friend Michaela was like, it's actually a great spot in a way, because like squirrels aren't really going to get up there.
They can't. They'd slide down.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even think. You wouldn't even think right. to go to a basketball hoop for a nest.
No.
I've never seen a baby hummingbird. I'm interested to see if do they fly right away. Like I don't know.
No idea. We're gonna find out.
They're gonna be tiny as fuck though. We gotta get like a drone. Do you guys have a drone? No.
I can see over it. Like it's on my balcony, so I'm just gonna turn the camera. Yeah. Like do you see the hoop? I can see right over it. That's how I was able to see the eggs. So I just looked over and I saw these tiny little eggs that look like Easter candy. I couldn't believe it. So yeah, so now, and it's just an FYI, it's illegal to move a hummingbird nest, but
is it really?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting too. Your mother would come back as a somewhat aggressive bird.
It's right.
It's not like a little dove, mourning dove. It's a very
I find them to be very beautiful, but they are, such interesting creatures. I never noticed one before. I was in a swarm of hummingbirds when I came back to LA. I'll never forget. I went to one of my first auditions. There was a courtyard.
A swarm?
I was in such a dark place. And all of a sudden that image of Snow White when she's like.
Yeah, the birds, the bluebirds around her.
Yeah, it was like that.
That's crazy.
And it was like a little scary, actually. Anyway, deep divers, I don't know if this is like listening to someone describe their dreams. I don't know, but I offer it because I could not dismiss this. And I feel so affirmed. And I just feel, I don't know. I feel really happy.
Well, so I'm sobbing. So
I want to share that joy. You know, I think so many of us, like we are able to share our traumas and we're able to share the horrible things but I just think it's important to share our real, like, soul satisfying joys. Cause I just had it. I had some this week.
I know. And I want to say, like, please, please believe if you can that the people you want to be there are there. Like, they're here. They're so here. And we don't have to try so hard. Mm. They really are here to help and guide. We just have to kind of like let go, you know, let go and let them sort of take the wheel a bit. Because if we do that and we get in touch with that, really, and I think it is a feminine energy that is just soft and like water, that we can have more joy. Sounds like a great party. I'm so proud of you for putting that together, you and Paul. Great parents.
Sorry. Thank you, my friend.
All right. Enjoy this interview, everybody.
Jessica.
Hi, June.
You there?
I'm here, baby. I'm here, baby.
Jessica, Jessica, we have a real treat today.
We've got a real fresh face looking at us.
And you know,
right,
I'm going to tell her right now before I bring her out to the stage that like we need her energy. You know, she popped onto screen and she looked like
I need her cheekbones.
She's something you ever did see.
I need those cheekbones.
And we just need a jolt.
They've been giving me life.
We need a positive energy, and I hate to put that on her, but I need to, because Jessica, my allergies are back, and
I know, I understand.
I don't know what to do.
And yet, you put a full eye on in an attempt. Sometimes I know the better your makeup is done, the worse you feel.
The worse I'm feeling. Yeah,
Cameron, welcome,
Cameron Esposito. She is, among so many other things, this bio really doesn't do her justice.
No,
but
doesn't.
She's a stand-up comedian, an actor, podcaster, has appeared across TV and film. You've hit pretty much every platform and medium. Her 2018 special, Rape Jokes, raised $100,000 for rape crisis intervention. She's currently on the ABC drama A Million Little Things, which I want to talk to you about because one of my dear friends, Elizabeth Lame, is a writer on that show, and we've talked about you at length. She's also in the HBO Max rom-com Moonshot and hosts the Query podcast on Earwolf. Cameron, welcome to the deep dive.
Yeah, it's great to be here. And I got to say, if you're looking for a jolt of positive energy, that's where I excel. It's motivated by anxiety and a desire to be liked. So, and I can walk in any room and really bring too much.
You are part of this crew then, because that's my MO. And maybe it's the Catholic thing. I don't know. But
oh, yeah.
We'll I'm a rescue dog. I might as well just flip over on the belly and say like, hey.
100%. Also, do you need like quiet strength? I can do that. What do you need? Do you know what I'm saying? This is me walking into a room.
I think you're already giving it. The energy you're coming at this podcast with is really important. And I'm also kind of impressed because I heard through the grapevine before you came logged on that you're an early riser and that you wake up at 5 a.m.
I am.
You're coming in with this jolt. You wake
you've
up at 5 a.m.
You've lived a life.
Every day?
You've lived your life by now. You've had a full day.
So prior to pandemic times, I spent 20 years just being out until the, I started doing stand-up in Chicago. In Chicago, there's a bar that stays open till 2, then there's a bar that stays open till 4, then there's a bar that stays open till 5. Different liquor licenses.
Right.
And what you're supposed to do, if you're cool and you want to fit in with the terrible men that you're doing stand up next to when you're 25, you have to go to the 2 a.m. bar. And then people are like, do you want to grab a quick burrito and then hit that 4 and then go to the 5 a.m.? You'd think you could skip the 4, go right to the 5, but you can't.
You can't. Wow.
So lived like a vampire for many years.
Now I'm using my actual body clock.
Oh, that's interesting.
Baby wants to get up real early and go for 19 runs at 7 o'clock in the morning.
And you want to be nigh-nigh by like 8 o'clock.
Yeah, that's right.
Like at 8, and as we've said, like June gets into her pajamas at 4 p.m. if she can and puts her children in there. Like she's like, time for nigh-nigh. And they're like, it's bright sunlight out.
I've often had to like close the curtains for them and like block out the sun because it's too bright to go to bed, you know, but I need the day to end pretty quickly.
Me
now,
too.
Some would say that's a sign of depression, but, you know, I'm not interested in investigating that any further.
That's great.
Do you feel Cameron, do you feel like your anxiety wakes you up in the morning? Because I feel actually like I pop open like at about 5 and I'm like, I want to run because I feel like my brain's already given it to me. So I feel best in motion. I can't lay in bed like being assaulted.
Yeah. What is anxiety? I guess would be my question. Is it
living
a feeling of being internally on fire?
Yeah.
Because that's how I wake up.
Me too.
I wake up standing. You know, I'm already standing.
Me too. You pop open your eyes and you're already dressed.
I'm already standing. No, I didn't know this because I chose such a stimulating job. Such a stimulating series of jobs. But it turns out that, like, I think my receptors to the world are too open. Something is going on where I notice everything all the time. I'm a little too hot to exist.
Yeah.
So I got to start in the morning.
Yep.
Burn it off.
Yep. First of all, I'm so inspired by this morning run. I used to be that way and something's happened to me. I used to be just like you. I used to wake up at 5 and get everything done and then go on a run and do all the things. And those days
you're tired. No, because right now you're physically tired.
I'm exhausted.
You had the COVID too. And also that's not, you've got to rest.
Thank you, Jessica. I'm really sorry to bring this back to my allergies, you guys. I don't want this identity.
I understand.
I do not want the identity of an allergy sufferer.
Got it. Okay.
I'm very upset about it.
Yeah.
And I have texted a doctor about an allergy cocktail for myself. I mean, I know Jessica's so mad at me right now for bringing up my allergies.
I'm not. Why? I love to talk about... I'm mad because I have the best doctor in Los Angeles and you didn't ask me
It is. So I may have to get that number from
you.
I said he gave me a cocktail.
You may?
And we checked in yesterday and he's like, is it working? I said, honestly, they're worse than ever.
Oh yeah,
they're worse than ever.
No, we need to go to Dr.
What
Fuller.
What does it feel like? What are you talking about? Eyes
you never had them.
No, I have a severe cat allergy.
As do I.
And I also have like some, you know, environmental allergies, but nothing is like the cat allergy. Like for me,
it's
like lungs closing, throat closing, eyes closing. So is that where you are right now?
I am in a... So I wake up, talking about waking up in the morning and can barely see. Yeah. And then I have to start my cocktail of Allegra, Nasacort, saline spray, eye drops.
Yep.
Immediately.
Yeah, so it's as if you have a cat on your face at all times, the whole day. That's why you're so
cat allergy.
June.
Oh, Jess. So
your system is working 50 times as hard just to survive.
And, you know, I can't tell you how resentful I am of this experience, you know, and I know.
I validate that.
We all suffer from different things. And this, I'm sure, is in the grand scheme of things, I choose this over other horrible chronic conditions. And yet it feels like the worst. And I just, you know, today I actually was like, I think I'm going to just try taking 2 Allegra. I'm not checking in with a medical physician. And I think I'm just going to take 2. And then I was like, if I fucking OD on Allegra,
I don't,
because you know, one of my worst fears is dying a death that's so dumb.
Yeah.
that no one can really grieve properly for me because they're really like, what did she do?
I really know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you mixed
I really
it.
Fear you, that. I really fear going in a way where it's like, oh man, like the reaction people have is just like, and maybe even they have to laugh and I don't begrudge them that, but it's just not what you want.
But I mean, if you went that way, here's just a reframe in case you wanted to try it.
Please.
You know, think about the sort of PSA version of that. You know, like it's like maybe people would laugh, maybe, but maybe people would be like, hey, we got to take these drugs more seriously because it's like
I would start a foundation.
Yeah, exactly.
I would start a foundation and I would raise money for the awareness. Mm-hmm. Just know that I would spin it if I could.
I appreciate that, Jessica. Jordan, Jessica sounds really low to me. I don't know if you could turn yourself up a little bit, Jess.
I also know, Jessica, and we can leave this in, that your levels are always shocking to the eardrum.
And Cameron, you have like the voice of an angel. I want it turned up. Like you and June, I want high in my ears. But I have been told by many people online and on set that I am mic'd. Please turn yourself down. Physically turn yourself down. This is not theater in the round.
Do you know what, though?
To project.
Look, I'm just going to say this. It's not on you. I have an unusually deep voice for a person that was born with the anatomy that we all share. And this is, everything's built for men. And I think that microphones are built to pick up low tones. Mm. This is why, and preach. Also we're used to hearing people on the radio, people who are, you know, announcer voices. We're used to hearing stand-ups even.
Right.
Who are speaking in a lower register. A lot of times when there are women who do stand-up, I hear the feedback of like the screeching or the high. It's what our ears have been conditioned to accept. Low tones are preferred. Also, technology was built to favor low tones.
Oh, I love that.
You know, nobody's
was built to favor low tones.
Yeah, mics aren't shorting out by some dude's baritone.
By Jerry Seinfeld.
It's the fucking Sopranos.
That's right. Reach it.
You know, yeah, so anyway, I just want to say,
I'm having a flash right now and a hit of when Casey and I were in acting school together, and our drama teacher, one of our teachers, was putting on a production of like an all-female Midsummer Night's Dream or whatever it was, and he was really upset that he had to do this and direct it, and because he said when women are speaking together, the pitch of their voices is too high and they all bring each other up and it sounds terrible.
Oh,
and I remember like fully internalizing that, like, oh, okay, great. Like, can't ever do a play with all women.
Oh,
we can't be heard. You know,
we make each other worse.
Yes. That was the feedback. Like, it's hard enough to hear one, but when you all are talking, it's like a you know what happens to dogs when they're listening to like it's too much for the human ear. And I was like, got it. I think I wrote it down in my notebook. You know?
I really
appreciate that, Cameron, because I do think it's one of the reasons actually why I really love podcasts, is because it's a place for, you know, women to be heard first
and themselves,
not seen and consumed visually. And by the way, why didn't we elect Hillary Clinton? The overwhelming feedback was like, I don't like her voice.
Yeah.
I don't 100%. Like the sound of her voice
or her pantsuits or whatever it was.
Somehow, and you know, it's like hard to figure out which things construct, like which way is it a chicken or the egg situation? But I have this like totally gender neutral name. Then I also think I have a voice that really fits what's going on with me gender wise, but a lot of people don't, you know, like, so I feel like, again, I'm in this position of like, there's a lot of things that feel confusing to me about myself, but one of them is not my voice. Another one is not my name. So that's great. But you know, a lot of people we're just mumbling through the world trying to convey to other people where we're at. It's hard.
Well,
it's
Cameron,
very true.
Listen, I want to stay on. I want to circle back to the allergies, June. Don't worry. We will be coming back to them.
We could just carve out.
But we do have
45 minutes.
We do have a best-selling author, you know, and a taste maker and like a cultural icon.
I know. I'm sorry. I just have to name them.
I know.
I have to place them in the conversation. And I need them to have a spot at the table.
They do.
Okay.
They're
should be in their own Zoom box.
Okay.
Because they are very much so with us. But you're absolutely right, Jessica. How dare I? And I'll take that feedback. I want to talk because you have written about growing up Catholic. Now, Jessica and I have touched on this because I consider myself a recovering Catholic. And when I think about growing up Catholic and having to undo what I learned as a child in the Catholic Church, it's like I've only really at the age of tender age of 42 begun to do that work because it's so much. And the thing that I walk around with in my life, like the main feeling I have is usually guilt. And I'm like, oh my God, I
cannot believe that one of the first things I learned about myself was that I had sinned. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a number one, like original. I remember learning about original sin and just being like, oh, of course, like I'm already bad.
Yep. Dirty coming
in. I'm already bad. And I just really appreciate that you've tackled it because it is so, I don't know. I feel like I need several other lifetimes to investigate what that upbringing was.
100%. You know, there's a couple things I'll say. One is I have two straight sisters who are, you know, gender conforming people. And I think in some ways I have had a great privilege in that, like, when I realized that I was queer, it was so fundamentally opposed to what I had been taught in the church that, like, there was a little bit of freedom in having, like, knowing that things needed to be investigated. Like, there's just,
You were already set apart. It was this is already not for me.
Yeah, I got to be like, oh, I wonder why I'm an anti-abortion activist, which is something that am I the only person in history to have gone to anti-abortion protests and then hosted the Planned Parenthood National Dinner? Yes, I think I actually am. I think I actually am the only person. You know, and I I think the thing that I'll say is, like, so in terms of being able to investigate and take things apart, rad. Also, I actually think that Jesus and also whoever wrote down or told the stories about those teachings had some cool stuff to say philosophically. And again,
1,000%.
That's rad. Like, I got to be able to go, like, fuck this place.
Right.
And these people. Mm-hmm. But, like, cool, glad I learned these things. And I can take what I like and leave the rest. But the other thing that I'll say that I think you just brought up, June, it's like, okay, intellectually, I can go to all those places. But the idea that something is, like, bad and wrong with me, I don't know how to ever get away from that. And it's like, I came out at a Catholic college where I could have been kicked out of school for being gay. Told my parents, they sobbed. They were worried I was going to actual hell with literal flames. You know, I told my best friend, she didn't talk to me for the rest of the year. That's 20 years ago.
Whoa. This is at BC. This is at Boston College.
This is at Boston College. It was terrible. It was a terrible experience. You know, that's 20 years ago.
That's so recent.
I think I thought I was over it. Until I wrote a book about it, and then I realized, like, oh, a little, like, you're maybe never going to be over that. Because it got welded to my bones.
Baked in. Yeah, it got baked in.
And, you know, I'm so sorry to hear that. And I actually appreciate you saying, I don't know if I'll ever be over it. Because I do think that, Jess and I have talked about this before. Jess, please jump in. But I feel like there's this cultural expectation that if we do the work, if we work on ourselves, then it's actually on us to overcome that amount of trauma and that, you know, and excommunication and isolation that you felt. And I'm a bit like, as I get older, I'm like, I don't know. You know, I don't know about that expectation that we should necessarily be able to heal that. I do believe that sometimes the truth is that generations from now, that healing will happen, but maybe not in our lifetime. And I mean, that's my own personal belief and spirituality, that some of the work I'm doing now is actually not for me, but it's for my children. And that's so right. I don't necessarily expect myself to be healed, but I do expect that I can offer my children something else. But it might not be for me in my lifetime. Gosh. And you know what I mean? That's actually like, I feel a little victim blaming when people are like, oh yeah, I've completely, and there's this huge narrative around, like, we should all be expected to heal ourselves.
Well, it's like you said, like, June, when you were talking about optimizing, like, everyone, you know, optimizing motherhood, and you've got to figure out how to be the most efficient. And I do think that is the same thing with trauma. I felt that after cancer, that I should, like, just get, you know, be my healthy self now and, like, enjoy my life. And it's like, no, that sadness will always be with me. I do think I am able to go, like, okay, that sadness is always going to be there about childhood stuff, about cancer, but I do have this one life. So how do I want to work on it so that it doesn't take too much joy away from me? Because it will always be with me, but sometimes it does actually block joy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that, first of all, it's very affirming to hear this from you too, because you're beautiful souls. And the thing I'll say is, you know, I wonder if like healing isn't actually just acceptance. You know, I feel
radical acceptance.
Yeah, and also not like removal, right? Like acceptance as opposed to removal, right? That the idea that I think that's where I had been is like, yeah, this stuff happened to me, but like I've removed its importance from my life. And so therefore I'm like good to go. I think that's also what culture wants us to do, right? Culture that's wants us to just be over things and like, sure, I've been, you know, sexually assaulted or I've been harassed at work or I've, you know, I'm constantly marginalized because of my identity, but like I've removed caring about that. I've removed the effects from my life. I'm, you know, in therapy and through that I have like, like shat and sweat and talked that out of myself. But like, I don't think that's the goal. I'm not sure that's the goal. I think it's my whole self is a person who's affected by these things. And it feels embarrassing a little bit. You know, I want to be this, especially me, I want to be this fucking tough guy in a leather jacket, doesn't give a fuck what you think of me, has no pain. Like this stuff happened to me, but I combed my hair straight through it and I didn't even care about it, you know? And it's like, I have been trying to be that person. I want other people to see me as that person. And it's so humiliating that actually I'm just like a soft, tender little bug that had real things happen.
Struggling. Like when you talk to a new therapist.
I hear that.
I just talked to a new therapist and I was like, so yeah, this, and this. And so like, okay, let's move on from that. Okay. And she was like, can we just take a minute? I was like, no, we can't because I should be over that. No.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have to do that thing where they're like, wow, that must have been really tough. And you're just like, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
Here are my list of things I need to change.
Yeah. Especially as women are like, I don't even know if that's how I identify. But I think especially as women, the idea that anything has affected us is like, is.
Yeah. That means you're broken.
Weakness. Is coded as weakness.
Well, I do really appreciate you bringing that shame and embarrassment into the space because we've talked about that before too. Like I find, you know, I've said this to Jess, like sometimes when I have to tell people like, oh yeah, both of my parents are dead and they died and, you know, and I'm sad about it or whatever I have to say about whatever I've gone through. It's like, it feels embarrassing. And it's for me, sometimes I feel like having experienced not one loss, but two is like, oh, that's too much. That almost becomes comical. And it feels shameful. Like somehow I couldn't keep everyone together and alive. Like I didn't have the capacity to keep people alive or that my stock is not like healthy people. And that's embarrassing to me. It's not the way, even though I present myself as someone with allergies, I struggle with that because I'm like, I'm not a sick person. Yeah. I shouldn't wait. You know, it is all connected. So I do appreciate that because it's a very real thing feeling that embarrassment is like a hell of a feeling, you know.
Oh my God.
I'm embarrassed most of the day. And I want to talk about the Catholic Church and queerness and because thinking about this conversation today, and I have to like talk a little bit lower, which I'll explain to you as after I get off this podcast. But I actually, when I think back to my own like sense of sexuality as a young woman or like 10, 11, 12, I think about my church and the image of Jesus Christ naked on that cross. And in some ways, even though like it's a both end, like what's true for me is that a lot of what I learned, I've had to unlearn, but it was one of the first times I was like, I
am seeing this man in almost naked. But he's also like pretty feminine looking and he's vulnerable and not quote unquote, like the sort of version of masculinity that I'm used to seeing. And even as an 11-year-old girl, I already know that women's bodies are the bodies that we see naked, the bodies that we see unclothed, the bodies on my TV that I know are sexy. And so it was this really confusing and interesting and actually inviting space to explore, because I knew also we were all worshiping this crucifix. And I would just like stare at it. And I'm like, it was a very, like, I don't know. There was a queerness to the experience that for someone like me growing up, where I was like, oh, I'm attracted to these boys. I'm terrified of them. I love my girlfriends. I only want to be close to them. I had this sort of like, and it was a space where I felt like there was actually an opening for a different understanding of how to like view the male body and female body in a way. Wow. And so it was weirdly helpful. And I know, yeah, Tori Amos has spoken about this at length and all of her music is about this, but it was this like weirdly like feminist and queer kind of experience for me. Anyway, so I don't know.
That's super interesting.
Did anyone else get?
I don't know that
I mean, there's a naked
that's really
man
interesting.
On a cross.
But here's what I'll say about that. That as you were talking, I was thinking about how, Jesus was also penetrated in death and then invited people to investigate that in rising. Mm. And as you're talking, I'm like, that's not a thing that we usually hear stories about men doing. Saying like, place your hands inside me.
Yes.
Investigate
get in there.
Place your hands inside
my
body. And that's fucking cool. And you know, I think about homophobia as like the root being actually misogyny, the root of homophobia being, because like lesbian sexuality is, there's two versions of it. There's the version that's commodified for men where like everybody has long hair and is facing away from each other and it's shot for porn. Then there's the other version of it that's like disgusting or man-hating. Like it's like there's two things. But the real thing that I think people are, when they're expressing homophobia, I think what they're really worried about is the idea of a man who would be taken by another man. Like the idea that a man would be penetrated and therefore would be a woman. As an abdicating of
their masculinity.
Natural power.
Yeah.
I was just trying to explain it to my son the other day when I was like, well, you know, we're talking about men and women. I was like, it's, you know, when your girls in your class put on pants and they ascend to power or not, or just are at a baseline. But if, you know, a boy puts on a dress, lots of times we see his power be taken away from him. And he's seen as absolutely.
Yeah,
and by the way, let me say, Cameron, I don't mean to. I feel like I just described that and maybe am not validating just how painful the Catholic Church is for so many people in the queer community. I'm just offering that image for me was weirdly empowering.
I mean, I think that's cool. Also, like,
never thought about it that way.
We should have a whole other, because I am very spiritually interested. I mean, I am very still curious about the church. I'm not a Catholic and I'm not a like practicing Christian, but I'm like spiritually very, very open and I'm very, very interested in Christianity. Like I think it is incredibly fascinating. During the time of the pandemic that everybody was baking bread, I was taking master's level theology classes at eight different universities because I thought I wanted to get my master's to become a priest. So my point is,
I thought your priest goals were pre-coming out.
We all thought my priest goals were pre-coming out, but then a global pandemic happened. And
wow.
You know, what happened really is that, and this is a much longer story that I'm just going to condense. It's like, a couple years ago, I had this massively painful divorce. And as I was going through that time in my life, I had been like, fuck you, the church. Yeah. Fuck you. Like, I just was like fully an atheist. Right. I was like, I don't need any of this. Stand up has always been very spiritual for me because I feel like I can really connect with people. It's like it's weird. If you want to hear a weird thing, listen to me talk about stand up sometime. But I feel like I'm like connecting, rooting through the ground into other people's bodies. And I'm like breathing air through their mouths. It's very fucking weird. It's a very spiritual experience for me.
It's like humanism, right? Wasn't humanism? I always say like, maybe I'm a humanist where like the divine lives in a person.
Yes.
And a person communicating with another person.
Yes. Yeah. It's like a God. It's like an encounter with God.
Feel the same.
And also a chemical addiction. Like stand up also feels like a chemical addiction for me.
Sure.
So there's many like very heightened things in that area. But as I was like in this sort of abject pain being in divorce, I think there was this moment where I was like, I just truly having like a Simpsons moment of like yelling at the sky and being like, is there anything, you know? And it kind of created an openness in me to other people having more wisdom about life than I do. Because when the Catholic Church broke for me, I think I was just like,
nobody knows.
I've got this. Like
nobody knows
more than me, because the people I thought knew more than me are so wrong that there's nothing here for me, like on earth. What a horrible way to then live the rest of your life, to think that you are the smartest, most powerful person. That is torture. And I'm so grateful that I had this like real bottoming out, because I don't have to feel that way anymore.
I had the same feeling when I had cancer, but also when my best friend died at 37, I was like, oh, I better get in touch with talking to dead people. Like I better believe.
Yeah. Yes.
I best believe that they have not left the building, because I can't be without her. I cannot and I will not. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was a very part of my Catholic upbringing, is like, we talk to dead people. Ask your grandfather. You need help, pray to St. Anthony. You need to find something. All of that, like that. And I don't know if that was just my Irish family, but like dead people do not leave. They are with us at all times and they can help you. And you should ask them, and they want to be talked to. So like, I kind of felt like I stole that part, kept it,
yes,
and then maybe brought it to the medium space, you know, where it's
absolutely.
And all that. Isn't it all the same thing in a way, that they are up there somewhere?
Listen, I
won't give it up. I will not.
And you shouldn't. And Jesse, I can't believe we don't have Cameron for much longer.
I can't. I feel like I'm crying.
I feel like I'm going to start crying.
Cameron, you're going to leave me alone and she's just going to talk about her allergies again. And I'm going to talk about it.
It's going to become an allergy podcast. I wish we could get a sponsor, because... Yes. I really do. Like,
well, you're OD'ing on this shit, so that I don't know if the,
like, we are puts us available. Out of the ball.
Anyway,
by the way, Paul Scheer is screaming in the next room, and I'm so fucking angry about it.
And nobody's saying his voice sounds terrible.
There we go.
No. So, Jessica, just to jump on that. So, by the way, the church that I grew up in. Why am I laughing about this? I'm about to say something absolutely horrific. The church that I grew up in has filed for bankruptcy last year because of the number of lawsuits they had to pay out.
It's terrifying.
Because of priests abusing children.
That's
so, fucking anger. I can't even, like, I can't even, you know. But I also my anger about like immaculate conception and nobody saying a word. Now, I grew up also in a very like sexually repressed kind of environment in which nobody, I told you, Jess, but the one book I got was about sex was covered.
Like yeah, on the brown paper.
Yeah, yeah, in brown paper and like well, yeah, and I was me and my sisters.
And I was told you better not have sex before you get married.
Yeah. Oh,
so that was the biggest course, like, thing I did to hurt oh, my family.
Listen, and then I like hit
and
20
I couldn't
and
stop
I lost my mind
it,
for 10
this way
years.
And that.
Yeah.
This
and way so and I that. Have a very typical like straight woman's kind of Catholic upbringing type of story, which is a complete rebellion, a complete, you know, losing of one's mind and whatever. That's what happened. That's my story. But I do have so much anger toward the Catholic Church that I honestly, like, it makes me shake with rage. And I was also one of the first altar girls.
Oh, I was, wow. I was an altar server as well. I was. You know what else I just want
to... That's old school.
Oh, so
Cameron, you have
say?
To go. You have to go.
I was
going
to say something that, because I do have to go in a second, because I had a last minute, I have like a kind of a big, cool meeting after this that happened last minute.
Before you go on, I need to tell you something. The current cult I'm a part of is that you do not say cross your fingers. We want to stay high vibration. And what we say is,
okay,
I can't wait to be in business with these people. It's going to be great. When I'm on the set of this thing, it's going to be so wonderful. So stop saying cross your fingers.
Excuse.
That's low energy.
Hot. Yeah. Okay. Let's bring our high priestess energy. We weren't allowed to be priests.
This is,
but we are high priestess.
Beautiful. This is fucking beautiful.
Okay.
And I actually think I can wrap us on, please. I think this is going to work. So this is not to look. Normally, do we believe in correction in the world of our friends on podcasts? Not always, but as an armchair theologian, I want to say that you use the phrase Immaculate Conception, June, and the Immaculate Conception is often people misidentify that as Jesus being conceived of inside of Mary.
Tell me more.
Sperm. That is not the Immaculate Conception. That is the virgin birth. The Immaculate Conception is actually that Mary in the Catholic Church is the only human being to ever have been born without original sin, which we brought back, which we were talking about at the beginning. In Catholic Church lore, there's only one person who has ever been born
That person's not Jesus Christ?
No, that person is not Jesus Christ. That person is Mary. And that is, so there's one disgusting read on that where you can be like, well, we can only be perfect when we are meant to be a vessel. That's a disgusting read on that. But a more feminist and beautiful read on it is that like, that is how powerful we are. That is how terrified men are. And I get it. Like, that's, again, when we go back to like the roots of homophobia, to not be a woman is the, you know, to be a woman is the most disgusting thing in the world. It's because to be a woman is we can keep the species going. We are we get to invite in the other groups.
They gotta get out there and search for stuff. We just discern and say you not you. Yeah,
they have to either assault us or ask.
It's
we
so sad, really.
Are the fucking drawbridge. Yeah. We are the gates. Like, we are the yes or no. Like, that's the body that we are born into. And it's like, and the invitation of Jesus to be like, investigate and enter and be inside of me. Like, only we, and yes, like, also anal sex is amazing and exists, but only we have multiple places that we get to do that. And only we, have the power to then turn that into additional life. So, I mean, look, I am fucking way more out there than either of you know. And I care about this so much. The way that I feel about the human body and her beautiful our and how the same stuff that's in the Bible that people want to grab and read literally in the grossest possible way could also be read philosophically in the most expansive.
And I'm so glad you brought that in, because I actually have my mother's, and we're going to wrap it up. But I pulled a card for you, by the way, for your meeting. But we're going to wrap it up, and I'm going to tell you that my mother's version of Catholicism is exactly what you're describing, which is, I never heard about Jesus Christ. She was connected to the Virgin Mary, Mother Mary, in a way that was like deeply feminist and matriarchal. And the reading you're describing is exactly, I think, how she experienced Catholicism. And I actually, you know, listen, as we're talking about it and I'm listening to you, I'm like, oh, I think going to Catholic Mass is 1,000% the reason why I got into theater, because of the theater of it and the theatricality of the Mass and finding it so beautiful. There's so much more to say, and I don't know when we're starting our Catholic podcast.
Sounds great.
I mean, but I can't wait.
And I want Cameron, I want you to start your own church, whatever we call it, in the hills of Pasadena. I'm going to come to it. I'll move east. For you, June, I won't move east. For Cameron, I'll move east.
I know. I am so glad I got the chance to talk to you both. And there's so much more to say. And we'll just have it as people over lunch.
This was frantic and this was chaotic. Yes,
it was.
This couldn't have been crazier. Yes. I never felt calm, not for 1 second here. No, not for a second.
Me neither. I feel like crying. I'm tearing up and I don't know what to do with this energy. Okay,
upset.
Cameron has
excited.
To go.
I feel
Cameron
angry.
Has to okay. go.
Thank you so much, Cameron Esposito. Where can we find you? Just tell our deep divers real quick.
Right now, honestly, find me on Instagram. Great. I'm having Wonderful a place. Whole experience of being on Instagram.
I'm loving the Instagram.
That's where you should find me.
Thank what is you, your name Cameron on it? Esposito. At Cameron Esposito. Yeah. Done.
At Cameron Esposito. Thank you, Cameron. Thank you so much for joining us. And deep divers, I wanted to mention that the Jane Club has an incredible membership level, which we call our Work Sprints membership, which is just, if you are working from home, if you are just trying to get shit done, it is the most incredible experience, where you can sign on to our Work Sprints daily, and we offer prompts, we have timed work sprints, we take breaks together. And it is a way to get motivated in community. And it's really, really wonderful. So if you head to janeclub.com and click on Work Sprints, it's $25 a month. But deep divers, you are going to be able to get $5 off your first month if you put the code in DiveSprint5. DiveSprint5 for $5 off your first month. I'll see you there.
Let's go up a deep dive. Let's go diving deep. Let's go on a deep dive. No secrets will we keep. It's June and Jessica going deep. How deep can you go? Oh, really deep. Let's go up a deep dive. Let's go dive in deep.
The Deep Dive is produced by Jessica St. Clair, June Diane Raphael, and Earwolf. Our producer is Cody Fisher and sound engineer Jordan Duffy. You can listen to our ad-free and bonus episodes on Stitcher Premium. And for a free 1 month trial of Stitcher, use code DEEPDIVE. And remember, the best way to support this show is to rate and review. And a huge thank you to Anne Geddes for her beautiful photo that she allowed us to use for our cover art. Please head over to AnneGeddesBaby.com and download her new app, which is a safe place you can upload and store all of your precious images of your children and share them with friends and family, plus much more. We'll see you next time.